This is the Shanice Lewis Show, the number one podcast for plus-size women. With your host, the queen of curvy conversation, Shanice Lewis.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Shanice Lewis. Today is Monday, May 2nd, 2016. Stay connected with me in between shows on Instagram at Shanice Lewis, on Facebook at Shanice Lewis Show, and on Twitter at Shanice Show. The Shanice Lewis Show is now on Google Play Music. The app is pre-installed on all Android devices. Just search for the Shanice Lewis Show and listen. You can also subscribe there and make sure you never miss a show. And for all the iPhone users, we were always on iTunes, so no worry. You can listen and subscribe there, and please rate and comment on the show. Today we have a very special guest, Tiffany Kaylin Knight. Tiffany is a fashion stylist, creative director, producer, and editor-in-chief of Scorch Magazine. With a unique upbringing in Hollywood, she has always been the big girl in a skinny world. Having interest in fashion at an early age with no real options in plus-size fashion, Tiffany started giving creative with her wardrobe and became styling early on. Fortunate to work with creative teams on movie sets, TV shows, and magazines set the pace for Tiffany's styling career. Fast forward to the present, Tiffany is now the editor-in-chief of Scorch Magazine and provides some of the most fashion-forward editorials in the plus-size industry. Tiffany truly believes that there are no apologies in fashion and no rules. Let's welcome Tiffany to the show. Hi, Tiffany.
Hi. Hey, girl, hey. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Well, thank you for taking the time for being on the show, because you don't do many interviews, do you? Is that on purpose, or do you prefer to stay behind the scenes?
I don't. I do prefer to stay behind the scenes. I wouldn't say I'm shy, because, you know, we know each other. You know I'm not shy, but
right.
I'm not really big on self-promotion, which is what you kind of need, I think, in this industry, but I'm very, like, I'm going to let my work speak for itself, sit back, but, you know, I'd do anything for you, Shanice, so here I am.
Well, thank you. So first, since you don't do many interviews, I want to get into your, to know a little bit about you before we start talking about industry stuff. So
okay.
In your intro, I mentioned your unique upbringing in Hollywood. Now, what made it so unique?
Well, you'll see my last name is Kaylin, and my dad is Cato Kaylin from the OJ trial. So I had a very unusual upbringing. I had to switch schools because I was going to a public school, and the paparazzi was hounding me at my school. And I was young. I think I was 11 or 12, maybe even younger. Mm-hmm. So I had to switch to a private school, and then everything kind of changed the second that he became a household name. And, going places, people recognizing him, because his popularity was in the height of my, like, teenage years. So I was mm-hmm. just starting to be like, I want my own identity. I want to look cool. I was also plus size, which made it hard because I was constantly surrounded by playmates and just, you know, the beautiful people of LA. And, you know, it was unusual. You know, I was going to the Viper Room and all these clubs, VIP, at a very young age. And
oh, really?
Yeah. You know, bumping elbows with celebrities all the time. And
now, did you know O.J. Simpson?
I did. You know, so my dad lived with O.J. I was best friends with Sydney. And so we were kind of inseparable. When my parents are separated, so I was with Cato every other weekend. But, you know, when I was there, I'd play with Sydney. And I knew OJ as OJ the dad. I mean, obviously I had no idea who the hell OJ was as a football player, because,
right,
you know, why would I know a football player from, what was it, the 80s? I don't know. But he was, you know, I stand by what I kind of, he was nice. He was always nice to me. But again, I knew him as very, like, on a very superficial level, just kind of the friend of, the dad of my friend.
Now, so during the people versus O.J. Simpson show, Chris Darden's daughter did a whole bunch of interviews and tried to capitalize off of it. Have you ever tried to use your father's name to get press or to boost your career?
No, and that's maybe part of my problem of why people don't know who the heck I am. No, I don't. I kind of had to, like, step out of that life and that world. I did that at a very young age. At about 17, I was like, this is not for me. This whole L.A. schmoozy kind of who do you know, and then that whole mentality of you meet somebody for the first time and you, like, give your resume, you know, hey, I have a commercial and I did this movie and I did this. I just kind of got really, like, sick and tired of that fake world. And I lost a lot of my young years. I lost a lot, like, of being a teenager and having fun and always wanting to be cool and do these cool things. And back then I was using, oh, you don't like me? Well, my dad's Cato and I know famous people. I did use that as a defense, but my mom was great and she put me in counseling at a very young age and it stuck with it. So it helped me better myself as a person and build a stronger character to where I could look at that, reassess and be like, I think I need to be a kid right now. I think I need to go hang out with my friends and that are my age and not be like wanting to hang out with 20-year-olds at clubs and stuff.
So how did all of this affect your body image and self-esteem?
It wasn't great. It was difficult because when you're surrounded by, even on my mom's side, so I went to school in Orange County and everybody was kind of like a blonde beach bunny. And then, you know, I would go into Hollywood with Cato and everyone was like playmate body. So I never really had anybody I could associate with or see, you know, like a positive plus size role model. I didn't have that growing up. I was always thinking, well, it's wrong to be this size. It's wrong to be like, I know I'm big, but I think I look good. And not having that, I mean, obviously you have your parents and stuff saying that you're beautiful and whatever, but when you're looking all around and you don't see any plus size cool people or whatever, it's hard. It was a hard thing adjusting, and I really needed to be strong-willed in my character, and that's why I think that I do, I really love plus-size fashion, and I love plus-size empowerment, because I had such an, you know, I didn't have that growing up, and I just think if I would have had that, oh, man, that would have been awesome.
So how did you discover the plus-size community and started getting involved with it?
Well, I have to be honest, it started because I found out that there were like plus size nightclubs, and I went and met a group of people at a club back then. It was an 18 and up club and it was called Voluptuity, and Lisa Garbo and Cher Rue, they used to run it. And so that was the first time I've ever had a group of, like, plus-size friends. And a couple of them did some modeling, and then I got into some modeling. And from that point, I started developing contacts, and then I was in a movie called Fat Girls with Monique and made contact through there.
I don't remember you
there.
Oh,
hi. Yeah. I was hiding in the wardrobe room with all the stylists most of the time.
Okay.
And so that's kind of where I started and met other plus-size women and, you know, started the journey of, like, plus-size styling and fashion. And because, again, I've always dressed funky and cool and, like, had my own style identity. And I look back at my yearbooks and stuff, and people are always making comments about my wardrobe. I was best dressed for my senior year. And yeah, and that was empowering too. I was homecoming queen and I was best dressed, and I've always been the biggest girl.
And that was
in Orangetown? But yeah.
Oh.
And I never let it stop me, you know? And that's kind of where my own personal body empowerment and positivity started, you know, but like in high school, just being the biggest, but not letting that hold me back from anything.
Now, one of your first projects was on the Fat Walk. Tell me about that project. What was that about?
That was just my blog that I started. You know, again, it was kind of in the wave of everybody started creating a blog. And, of course, I jumped on that bandwagon. And, you know, you get enough people saying, oh, where is that from? Or I love your style. So it was kind of an outlet for that and to show I've got a unique body in the sense that I'm very heavy-chested. And I know there's other girls like me. So showing how to dress or where to get clothes that'll fit and, you know, tips and tricks for heavy-chested girls. So I created On the Fat Walk. Yeah. And got a little momentum going with it. You know, featured on Torrid and then Lane Bryant, and got because of the way my body looks, I had a really negative experience. And that is probably another reason that I kind of took a step out of it. Because I get associated with looking like slutty just because of the way I'm built. So I could wear a dress that somebody with, you know, a more flat chest would wear, and because I have huge boobs, I get slut shamed quite a bit.
So people think you try to dress promiscuous on purpose when really you're just fitting the clothes that way naturally.
Right. You know, I have cleavage and a turtleneck. I can't help it.
Now, you also started working with the plus-size clothing line Domino Dollhouse. Now, is that how you got started as a fashion stylist more professionally?
I had done some things here and there way back, you know. I started styling probably in my late teens. And just doing some, like, local California stuff, because there were a couple brands that, you know, were trying to take off, and there were a lot of people. There was a big movement, I don't know if you can remember, where people were plus-size modeling a lot more. There were a lot of, like, modeling contests and, you know, little, like, calendars going around and things like that. And so I would get booked to style those. In fact, I was filming a reality TV show, and that's how I met Tracy from Domino Dollhouse. And they had booked me on this reality show as kind of a plus size model, stylist, you know, blogger, whatever. And Tracy was styling the shoot that they were filming me doing. And we hit it off, and we have very similar style. And she kind of gave me my quote unquote big break. And, I started working for her and, you know, the Domino Dollhouse brand, which is very in line with my personal styling brand. And she would give me so many great opportunities and always asked me for my input on designing collections, and really was like a champion for my brand and, you know, like a mentor, really.
Now, Domino Dollhouse is no longer in existence. It's no longer in existence. So working so closely with this brand, how do you feel we can better support plus-size indie designers?
I think providing yourself with knowledge is key, because you see people complaining about price points, and I think price is the biggest factor in what people complain about. You know, you can get a dress at Forever 21 for $20, but an indie designer is going to have to charge $60, especially if they're sourcing it in LA, or I'm sorry, in the US. It's just going to cost more, and you don't know these things as an outsider. You don't, you know, you need to take the time to, like, before you complain on a public forum, maybe realize that you're not, the designer is not trying to screw you. They're not trying to, like, you know, steal your money. It really does cost a lot as an indie designer when you don't have a sweatshop working for you. And, mm-hmm. You know, to get these unique clothings and to build these patterns from scratch, that's an added cost. And to get better material, you know, because then you see, oh, this material is so cheap. So you pay to have better material. That's an added cost. And you don't realize how it adds up. And then before you know it, to make any kind of profit, you have a $100 dress. And when I say mm-hmm. profit, I mean a very small profit margin. And then you mm-hmm. figure, Tracy had me as an employee that she had to pay, and then you produce photo shoots. So you hire models, you hire makeup artists, you hire stylists, you hire, you know, the studio itself. All these costs factor into the price of the garment. And so I don't think the average person knows all this. They just see, well, I can get this cheaper somewhere else. Why can't you do it?
Right, and but it's not the same quality.
Right. It's not the same quality, and it's going to, you know, it's indie designers like Tracy, like Chubby Cartwheels, and when I say Tracy, I mean Domino Dollhouse. They're kind of setting the bar for the trends that are coming up by these, like, big box stores, you know?
Wow.
Like Monique C, for example, Monique C's swimsuits. I don't know the backstory, if she sold her patterns or whatever, but now you see Monique C style swimsuits everywhere, and she started that, you know, she kind of set the bar for these cool swimsuits, and now you can see them on these, like, cheap sites for a fraction of the price, but, you know, she spearheaded that trend.
Right, and they're ripping her off.
Right. So, you know, I think knowledge and, you know, we have the disadvantage and the advantage of social media when we can, it really can make or break a business. It's very frustrating and it's very almost saddening in a way when you put your heart and soul into something, you put it out there, and the only thing you tend to hear is the negative.
Right.
You know, when you're an indie designer, you're starting this up as a passion project. You're putting your life into it, your savings, whatever it may be. And, you know, I think in general, we just need to be more supportive as a community. I think we've gotten into the place where we're just always on edge and always complaining and or picking somebody apart or saying something negative. So in general, as a community, I really think we just need to, like, reevaluate, readjust, and support.
Yeah, be more supportive overall.
Right.
Now, how did you get started working with Scorch Magazine and eventually becoming the editor-in-chief?
Well, I think it's because I'm so awesome. But really, Jessica Kane is just this mastermind of spotting talent and giving people their shots. And she saw my blog, saw my writing and saw my styling and then, you know, looked at some of my styling for other things I did around. And I started out with just an editor, like a fashion editor for them, for Scorch. Well, actually, I started out by just by submitting pictures for the magazine. And then, you know, she sees stuff in people. You know, she saw stuff in Tess before Tess became Tess and Nadia before Nadia became Nadia. She's really great at, like, seeing the it factor in people. And I'm not saying I have the it factor, but I think she saw that the potential of running this plus-size fashion magazine in me and that the market needed something a little bit more left of center as far as fashion goes, something more for the, like, alternative indie girl. And that's kind of my specialty, you know.
Right.
So she gave me my big break or my big shot, and it was kind of like starting from the bottom and then working my way up, and then all of a sudden I became there was some changeover at the top, and I was given the opportunity, and it stuck for about, I think it's about 4.5 years now.
Mm-hmm. Now, Scorch Magazine has some of the most fashion-forward editorials in the plus-size industry. Now, is that your influence as a fashion stylist, and do you think that's something that's lacking overall in plus-size fashion?
Yes and yes. I think we're, as a plus-size woman, you're kind of programmed to think dress flattering and dress for your curves, dress for this, dress for that. And I'm like, take that all away, dress how you want to dress. And for my particular style, I dress, you know, one day I'll be boho, one day I'll be more like goth, one day I don't really follow a fashion guideline. And I think that benefits the styling world because I'm able to go off to a photo shoot and have a really, like, no rules approach. You know, I've done a cool shoot with a model. Her name's India, and she was in Tiketti with some really cool harnesses, and she had a little fashion boob showing, and, you know, stuff that looks really cool and really high fashion. And I get a great group of people that I work with. I work with Nicole Alex a lot as the photographer, and she totally, like, always sees my vision and has great input on set, and we just, I think we banged up some really cool.
I cover for Scorch Magazine. They came out really nice.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was beautiful, you know, just, and we took, like, for instance, for our shoot that we did, we took a simple concept and elevated it with the hair and the makeup and, you know, having the cool jewelry placement. When you can tend to get in that kind of safer box, which I don't like to do. I like to kind of think outside of the box, and I read a lot of magazines. I look at a lot of fashion editorials. I still look at YouTube and, like, watch runway shows from the 90s. I'm obsessed with this YouTube channel that, like, has, you know, back when we had all the, like, supermodels and watching that kind of stuff. So I'm constantly inspired every day, and there's no reason that can't be produced on a plus size body. And I'm not talking, like, I really like working with size 20 and 20 plus.
Now, why is that so important to you?
Because I think we see less than a size 20 enough.
Right.
And I would, you know, I know the average size woman is a size 14, but for me personally, I want to know how the clothes are going to look on a body more similar to my body, and to see what I can do with something, you know, like just take a black dress and then see how I can transform it with accessories and styling. And I don't know that that's done a lot. And I hear, you know, competitors talking about doing it a lot, but I like to put it into action. And I think the more you do it, the more we're going to see it mainstream. You know, Tess is a great example of having mainstream success as a size 22 plus. So we just need to see more of it, you know.
Now, how do you go about selecting your models for the cover and the editorials in the magazine?
It varies. So the issue we're going to have coming out, we're going to have a size 26 on the cover, and she's also African-American and just like jaw-droppingly beautiful. I mean, the second I met her at I had an event with Tess and Amina. The second I met her, I was like, you need to be my cover. And I was just inspired by the way she looked. But a lot of times I'll kind of come up with an idea for the cover, and that'll be the vibe of the magazine. So we had a whole 90s issue, and I knew this Clueless shoot was going to be a big deal. So knowing how the theme of the magazine, and then basing the cover off of that, and then coming up with who's best suited for the style of editorial. So I knew Kelsey would be an amazing Alicia Silverstone. I mean, because she already looks like her. And then I also knew Sarah Dickerson, you know, would be a great D, because, again, she already looks like her. They're all local.
Right.
And then Tess would be a great tie. So, it just kind of was like the perfect cast. And then I also did a lot of,
and that's
like,
important to say, too, the majority of your photo shoots are based in L.A., right?
Yes, yes. So occasionally we'll get people that submit editorials, and or I'll produce it abroad. So we had Danny Veneer and Callie Thorpe and Georgina as our cover, and so I kind of virtually styled and produced that from the U.S., even though it was shot in the U.K. And then we used to work with Chelsea in Canada, and she produced some really cool photo shoots, really, really cool, very in line with the Scorch brand. And we had one where the model had a unibrow, and people went nuts over that, like nuts, like, how did you do this? But it just looked really cool and like really high fashion. So again, breaking the rules, you know, not putting just like prettiness, just kind of like, just, it's about fashion, you know?
Right. And you even used a male on your cover before.
I've used two males. I used Delta Work from Drag Race and Patrick Starr.
Yeah, so you are really believing in diversity at Scorch Magazine.
Absolutely. I think everybody has the right to see fashion, and everybody has the right to kind of wear what they want. And, you know, Patrick's a huge star now, you know. You've got this huge network, and having his plus-size followers kind of see him in this light, it was really positive feedback. And, you know, from that, he didn't even know there were clothes that existed for him because of the, you know, oh, there's only Tord, there's only Lane Bryant. And there's nothing wrong with those options, but he didn't know that you could get this level of fashion in the plus size community. So it's still kind of beaten out of us that,
right,
you know, we have to dress a certain way.
Now, I want to talk to you a little about online bullying, because I know your pictures have been stolen and used in memes before that were, you know, mean. So how did you deal with that?
Did you say online bullying?
Yes.
Yes. I know I should care more, but I'll tell you what makes me more sad is when other plus-size women gang up on other plus-size women and they project their insecurities on women that don't have those insecurities. I think that gets to me more than, you know, somebody just being a jerk, because that's going to happen no matter what. I mean, plus-size or not, people are going to be mean and nasty, but when you're in a similar situation and you know, wherever you live and you think this should be one way, you know, like I can't wear stripes because I know it makes me look bigger, but I see this girl, she's wearing stripes, she looks bigger, I'm going to be really mean to her for that. That's the part that gets to me. And I know it's insecurity, and I know, I'm sure in some way it's jealousy, and I wish that those things wouldn't come to the surface so much and that they could just take it and see, oh, well, maybe I can be inspired by this and change the way I think as opposed to being so closed-minded.
So,
I just feel kind of sad for people, but
so
it doesn't really.
So when you say there's bullying in the plus community, I thought you meant maybe like people that know each other that try to cut each other down, but you mean comments online? Or really both probably.
Both, yeah, absolutely both. I mean, I've had a lot of slack because I'm friends with Tess, and there's a big group of people that don't like her, and you're kind of mm-hmm. guilty by association. And I was called some things, and, you know, there were words exchanged and things like that. And that's the kind of thing that instead of taking 2 seconds and passing over it, it takes me a little bit to get over it, where I'm like, this makes me a little bit sad that it's kind of come to this.
But you never comment to anything publicly, right?
Not normally. There's a few times where I've been like, all right, I'm saying something. And it's just kind of benefit anything, you know, because people that take things that far, they're so far into their mindset. You could make the most sense as possible. It won't make a difference. They believe what they want to believe, and they have the feelings. And if they're justified or if they're not justified, there's no changing the way they think. And, you know, I have made the mistake of getting involved like 1 or 2 times. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
and
you live in New York.
And that just escalated, probably.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So now I'm kind of on the hit list, and I'm sure this will be brought up. You know, I'll have some kind of post dedicated to what a jerk I am, but you know, what are you going to do? People are going to do what they want to do, and you decide.
Well, and that
kind
of comes with being in the public spotlight. The more known you are, some of this is to be expected, don't you think?
But I agree.
You have
absolutely.
Kind of experience with this from your father?
Yeah. But you know, it hasn't really been until this, the People versus OJ, that this has kind of become a big deal again. And I don't really mm-hmm. publicize that he's my father. So,
okay.
You know, people ask me, I'll tell them, but it's not like, I'm not like, hey, I'm Tiffany and my dad's Cato. So
it's a totally different experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't, The thing that I don't like about having kind of the past that I've had and my dad being who he is I want every interaction and every person that I have in my life to be a genuine one. And I never want to have that fear like, well, they only like me because of this, or mm-hmm. They only want to get to know me because of this. And I'm pretty good at the, I don't know, could I say the S word on here?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm pretty good with the bullshit detector, and you can kind of tell right away because it's something I've been dealing with my whole life. But
right.
Now that it's kind of like circling back a little bit and a little bit more popular because of that show,
mm-hmm.
It seems to be like I do notice a little bit more of the bullshit coming out.
Well, thank you for being honest and open about it. I think we really learned a lot about you. Now, do you have anything else coming up we need to be on the lookout for? I know you said a new Scorch magazine is coming up. Anything
yep,
else?
Yep, a new Scorch is coming up. Patrick has some cool appearances that I've been dressing him for. I just picked up a new client that I'll announce soon for styling, who's a really big deal, and I'm excited to get my hands on her. And I just have to say that I'm really proud of the fashion world with plus size clothing lately. I've been so impressed by companies like Torrid and even Lane Bryant with Christian Siriano's collection, and I know JCPenney's doing some cool stuff with Ashley Nell Tipton. And I really think that the culture of fashion is kind of changing, and it's getting better and it's getting more on trend, and you know, a lot of those walls are being broken down, and I'm really, really happy. And I think it has to do with the strong community that we do have in place. You know, like Ashley winning Project Runway, and, you know, Tess becoming mainstream, and Rebel Wilson doing a collection. It just, I think everything is getting better, and I'm really happy, because I remember never being able to find anything when I was shopping, to now being like, yeah, oh my God, take my credit card away. So,
right.
You know, I think I just wanted to publicly say that I'm proud of these companies, and you know, and the indie fashion, which is my, you know, root and my bloodline. I'm just happy with the way things are going, at least in the fashion world.
Well, awesome. So tell us your official websites and social media pages so we can keep up with everything you have going on.
Sure. The best place is scorchmagazine.com for my kind of, because it's my baby, you know, that's the best place. And then my Instagram is at Tiffany Kalin, and that's K-A-E-L-A-N. And then, of course, at Scorch Magazine. So, yeah, I'm super easy to find.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show and giving me a rare interview with you. I think it was awesome.
Thank you so much, and great job. And hopefully I'll see you again soon.
Yes, definitely. When I come back to L.A., we'll have to do something.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you. You as well. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. And thank you to my fabulous guest this evening, Tiffany. And if you haven't already, don't forget to like our fan page on Facebook at facebook.com/ShaniceLewisShow. I've been your host this evening, Shanice Lewis. Thank you for tuning in and supporting. Until next time, keep thriving in your curves and be blessed.
You've been listening to The Shanice Lewis Show. For more info about the show, visit ShaniceLewisShow.com.